It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's gonna get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
All right, everybody, it is time to go back in time and forget about the current product, forget about any frustrations we may have or concerns, and go back to those lovely days that we all remember fondly. And this is also a kind of a different show for Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm going to be focusing on ECW's One Night Stand in 2005 and in 2006. Now, we're not going to go through every match and break down every match. That would, to me, be too long of a night for me, way too long. But I'm going to go through some of the highlights, some of the memories I have of that, and break those down, give you guys some audio from it, as always, because there are some big moments from those pay-per-views, very memorable ones. Very real ones, which I think is why they are memorable, is because they felt so genuine, and I think they were, so we'll get into that. And don't forget, there were two shows of ECW's One Night Stand that took place in 2005 and 2006. And if you guys have suggestions for nostalgia shows, hit me up. RealWWEPodcast@gmail.com is the way to go, place to go, to send your suggestions. So if you're interested, go ahead and do that. But let's get into ECW's One Night Stand. And this was something that, when I was watching this, now, I was never a ECW guy. I had nothing against ECW, just like I had really nothing against WCW at the time of the Monday Night Wars. I just didn't get drawn to the product like I did WWE's. It didn't pull me in like the WWE did with their storylines and characters. To me, ECW, and this isn't a knock on them, you know, looking back, I actually appreciate it now. But at the age of 13, 14, 15, 16, that's how old I was during the Attitude Era. Senseless violence didn't really draw me in. And that's how I viewed it, kind of. I mean, and I know that's a lazy analysis because it was more than that. But at the time, that's what I thought. You know, it didn't grab me from anything other than superficial violence. So which is why I never really got into it. So WWE, I mean, they had the best production, the best platform, the best network. They really, in my mind, for a number of reasons, but those are just a couple, grabbed me and brought me in. So I just want to lay that out there, that I was never a ECW fan where I would wear a shirt, or I barely knew who the Sandman was. And when guys started coming in from ECW, I didn't, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't really know who they were. And you may be saying, how did you not? Here's an example. And you're going to laugh, right? Because I do a whole podcast now and I dedicate like six nights a week to this show. But I did not know who Taz was when he debuted in the Rumble. I believe it was 2000, 2001 that Taz debuted in the Royal Rumble. And I didn't even know who he was then. I had no idea who Taz was. How about that? When people went nuts, when Taz debuted and number 13 popped up, I'm like, what are we cheering for? So how about that for my range of pro wrestling knowledge at the time and how laser focused I was on just WWE. So that, I mean, again, that's telling. But I want to break it down for, I'm not going to pretend that I was a ECW super fan or that I was even really following the product loosely. I really didn't know who some of the big names were in ECW. I mean, I went on to learn who they were through the years and through talking to other fans and interacting. And we didn't have social media back then, but I just want to lay that framework out there. And many of you may be in the same boat. Some of you may or may not be. Maybe you were more of an ECW fan than I was. Again, nothing against the product. It just wasn't what I was looking for at that time. And WWE, I think, did a better job of what I wanted. But let's get to ECW's One Night Stand. And this, again, don't forget, this took place in 2005, 2006. And WWE did go on to create an ECW brand, I think, through 2008, 2009, and it died a slow death. I think Bobby Lashley was ECW champion at one point, but I don't count that. I want to be very clear, too. I don't count that as ECW. That was WWE's watered down version of ECW, which is a joke, a complete joke. So I want to be very clear. I'm talking about the original ECW. When I speak of, I never watched, because WWE's version is a complete farce. So the first edition of the One Night Stand pay-per-view consisted of 7 matches. Here's some names that are going to throw you for a loop. Lance Storm with Dawn Marie defeated Chris Jericho in 7 minutes. Super Crazy defeated Little Guido and Tajiri in a 3-way dance in 6 minutes. Rey Mysterio defeated Psychosis in 6 minutes. Sabu with Bill Alfonso and RVD defeated Rhino. Okay, I know that. I know who Rhino is. I know who Sabu is, okay? In 6 minutes. Chris Benoit defeated Eddie Guerrero by submission. I'm going to have to go back and watch that, because looking at that, and I understand when I say Chris Benoit's name, everybody thinks of the tragedy. I'm over that. I'm not dismissing it. I'm not pretending it doesn't exist. But this is a pro wrestling show, not a political show, nor a news outlet. So I'm looking at the professional Chris Benoit. Yes, I'm going to separate the two. I know people, oh, you can't say, yes, guess what? We're going to do that here, because I'm not ignoring Chris Benoit's professional career. Now, what he did was a tragedy, and it will forever overshadow his professional, or in his personal life, will forever overshadow his professional career, no doubt. But I want to be very forthright on how I view Chris Benoit's professional career only. That's all we're discussing here. My point is, I would love to go back and watch that match, given the two competitors and absolute just top-notch level, top talent guys there. Mike Awesome defeated Tanaka in a singles match in just under 10 minutes. And then in the main event, this was the main event, the Dudley Boys defeated Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman in a tag team match in just shy of 11 minutes. Wow. All right. So I do want to talk about one thing that happened here. That was absolutely a shoot. Real. It was not part of the show. It wasn't supposed to be. But JBL legitimately attacked the Blue Meanie, causing him to bleed in a scuffle. That was real. Now, the issue between JBL and Blue Meanie, I still don't know the real deal of it. You know, when you hear about JBL and all of his bullying allegations, those have been legitimized and verified by several people over the years. So, do I believe JBL was and maybe continues to be that type of guy? Probably. Probably. I don't think that he's ever going to shake that. So my point is, during this scuffle with JBL and Blue Meanie, do I think that maybe it's 100% JBL who caused this, or maybe Blue Meanie deserved it? Again, the history on JBL does not lead me to believe that I should be on the side of JBL on this thing. So Blue Meanie gets attacked, punched. I do remember him bleeding. It was a legitimate couple of punches he got in on Blue Meanie during that scuffle. So we'll get to the finish. Stone Cold actually appeared in this pay-per-view, so we'll get to that too. But I gotta just start with the promo that Paul Heyman cut. The promo that, for all intents and purposes, was, there's no way this was a work. I would say it was a 95% shoot. So let's take a listen to Paul Heyman's promo this night.
And I was going to take the high road and just say thank you and leave.
Don't take the high road, Paul.
I have something to say to you. You see, I've waited a long time to say this to you, Eric Bischoff. But in case you don't notice, it's not Paul Heyman with his tail between his legs going to a WCW pay-per-view. You are in our house, bitch!
Okay, we're going to get to more, I promise. I just don't want to have a long, ongoing four-minute clip. So Paul Heyman, for the first part of this promo, for the first few minutes, I didn't put on the air here. Just thanks the fans, say this is not WCW, this is not ECW or WWE, this is ECFingW. The fans are rowdy as hell. It is like the most degenerate and young version of the Attitude Era fans that you could get. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. It's just a much different breed of fans. I was a part of those fans. So if people think I'm insulting them, I'm insulting myself then, because I was involved in that rowdiness. Not that night, but at many WWE events that were very, very non-family friendly. I'll just say that with the comments and the chants. So, but it was a very hostile environment for anybody that's not ECW, for anybody in Hammerstein Ballroom here in Brooklyn. It was a very, very hostile environment. And we had Eric Bischoff up on, I guess, the second tier there while Paul Heyman's in the ring. JBL is there, among others. It gets, I think Edge is here. It gets pretty damn good. So I'm going to stop talking and let you guys listen to some more. I forgot how entertaining this damn thing is. Okay, so I'll pause just again for a second. And if you don't know, if you're living under a rock, what Paul Heyman's alluding to is the whole scandal between Lita, Matt Hardy, and Edge, where Matt Hardy was dating Lita, and Edge was the heel in this whole scenario in real life, where he seemed to come in and swoop away Lita from Matt Hardy. And that led to Matt Hardy coming back to WWE. And I know that Anthony DeMarco has covered this on his Rivalry show before. And it's really a good storyline because it's based on reality, real stuff. I mean, it wasn't any kind of work. This was a real deal. And it was just uncomfortable, but beautiful to watch too. So at the time, it was when Paul Heyman said Matt freaking Hardy. Yeah, it was three words, not two. And the guys on the balcony are all saying that was three words, right? Yeah, you can't count. Okay. But at the time, everybody in WWE who was facing Edge was not cutting any kind of promo related to Matt Hardy, even though they all knew Matt Hardy was, it had come out at the time that Matt Hardy was the victim in this whole thing. And Edge was now really with Lita. And it did not bode well for Edge playing a babyface. I'll just tell you that right now. A lot of Matt Hardy chants on Raw. I do remember that. And everybody had to just ignore it, which is why it was so unique and nice to hear Paul Heyman say Matt freaking Hardy. So that was nice. So let's continue on. There's still more magic to come.
I almost forgot about you, Mr. personal note from all of us just to you, since you want to shoot, cowboy. The only reason you are WWE champion for a year is because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesday.
Wow, the emotion there is, I wish I was doing podcasts back then. This would have been an absolute explosion. Imagine something like that coming out today, if this was with the social media world and this scenario played out in 2021. Oh my God, Twitter would blow up. It would be the biggest news story in pro wrestling in, 10 years. It's great. When you have legitimate shoot promos, real stuff coming from Paul Heyman, shooting at Edge, shooting at JBL and Eric Bischoff. Especially his comment to JBL about the only reason you were WWE champion is because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesdays. There's probably some truth to that. There's probably a little bit of truth to that, given the fact that at that point, Triple H and Stephanie were married and everyone knew it, but weren't supposed to say anything. And it was just behind the scenes. And again, these things that he spoke about, yes, they're common knowledge now, so they don't seem too shocking now. And they're not when you put it in 2021 context. But if you imagine a world where these things were never spoken about, you just didn't say these things. Matt Hardy was not a name that you mentioned on wrestling programming to Edge. You just didn't. It was a no-no. The comment to Eric Bischoff, the comment to JBL about the fact that you're only champion because Triple H doesn't really run to work Tuesdays, even though people may have thought it, it was things that you never would bring up in a promo because it would kind of expose the business and undermine the champion. And it was just brilliant. It was great to see. And the crowd was eating his every word up, Paul Heyman, that is. So this is just great, great stuff. I will never forget that promo as long as I live with ECW's One Night Stand. But boy, oh boy, then we get to the following year. And the following year, let's take a look at the card here. Taz defeated Jerry Lawler by submission. Kurt Angle defeats Randy Orton by submission. The FBI, Little Guido, and Tony Mamaluke, I think I said that right, I haven't said that in a long time, with Big Guido, defeated Super Crazy and Tajiri. Rey Mysterio versus Sabu ended in a no contest. Edge, Lita, and Mick Foley defeated McGillicuddy, Terry Funk, and Tommy Dreamer. Balls Mahoney defeats Tanaka. And then in the main event that went 20-plus minutes, John Cena loses to RVD in an Extreme Rules match for the WWE Championship. And that's the match I'm going to focus on here because that's the one that is it's best known for the crowd reaction. Probably the most hostile reaction I've ever seen for anyone ever. And that's saying something. Maybe only rivaled, I should say, by the night after WrestleMania 33 in Orlando with Roman Reigns coming out after beating The Undertaker and the crowd crapping all over him for nearly 15, 20 minutes. That may only be rivaled by that event, which is still beautiful in my mind. So this match, again, the crowd reaction was so negative to Cena. I mean, it wasn't even 99.1%. It was 100% to zero for John Cena. It was that brutal and that great and that beautiful to watch. And John Cena knew he was going into hostile territory, but I don't think he understand how hostile it would be with fans rejecting his t-shirt multiple times. Chance, you can't wrestle. The boos when his music went off. We're going to get to all this, by the way, are just deafening. And the reason is, if you're looking for getting into specifics as to why maybe the crowd was so negative, well, not only was he a WWE guy, but you have to remember, he embodies everything that ECW is not. He is the antithesis of ECW, a guy that was chosen. Yes, John Cena worked his ass off. There's no question about it. But the perception that he's the corporate choice, and he was, and that he didn't really know how to wrestle a technical match. He wasn't exactly a great chain wrestler, and still isn't, and never was. But one of the most successful superstar wrestlers of all time. I mean, so he didn't have to be. But he embodied everything. Clean cut, the modern version of Hulk Hogan, WWE on top of it, never went to ECW. He was the perfect heel to go against RVD. It was a perfect setup, a perfect storm. And that perfect storm led to this. We'll continue this in a minute, but I know, again, this is the limitation of audio versus video, of course, because what you can't see are people flipping him off. I mean, a large portion of the audience giving him the bird. The booing you can hear, but you can visually see it in people yelling at him, cussing him out. Just an absolute vile response for John Cena, which was such a nice thing to see as a fan watching the WWE product that felt like John Cena was the soft version of a Stone Cold or a Rock, because he was essentially picking up where they left off. And John Cena arguably is on their level in terms of popularity. And he just got absolutely destroyed. Again, what you didn't see was John Cena holding up the WWE Championship on the ramp, but then putting his head down and just holding up the championship, walking to the ring. Head down, no jumping around, dancing around like he does on Monday Night Raws. Again, this is 2006, and he knew that, you know, somebody may actually try to throw a punch. It was a smart thing to do, to just put your head down and, you know, kind of by default, protect yourself by holding your arms up and holding the championship up and just kind of making a swift walk to the ring. I mean, it's probably smart on his part. But, I mean, it gets even better as we move on here, because John Cena tries to, he tries to get rid of his shirt, and that doesn't go so well.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing first, the challenger, weighing in at 235 pounds from Battle Creek, Michigan, representing ECW, Rob Van Dam.
faithful. Well, you catch it all night.
And I don't think John Cena understands. These ECW fans want no part of him whatsoever, except maybe his head.
Nice throw. Cena, give it up. I've never seen nothing like this. And listen, I've seen these ECW fans, as you, Joey, get on people, but not like this. I mean,
John Cena, perhaps the most controversial WWE champion in recent memory, usually gets a mixed reaction somewhat in front of WWE fans, but...
Imagine if you're... Well, it's not mixed tonight, by the way, do you? No.
Well, it's mixed between those flipping the middle finger and those actually using the F word.
Yeah, there's several doing that.
Yep.
Okay. That's love.
I know that guy.
He said there's going to be a hostile environment. I don't know if it's bad.
Oh my God, I forgot how just this went on. I mean, for several minutes where John Cena was trying to throw his hat into the crowd and his shirt that the fans were just throwing back at him. When is the last time you saw a reaction like that, or heard an, I shouldn't say seen because you can see it yourself, but heard a reaction like that for anybody? That nobody wanted even a souvenir for them for free. And John Cena was a massive name in wrestling at this point, and the fans still wanted nothing to do with him during this match. It was brilliant. Now, obviously, we have RVD going on to win. Smart move. And if it wasn't the plan, they probably should have called an audible in the middle of that ring. Because if they didn't have RVD win, there really, truly, and I mean this, may have been a large-scale riot in the building. For real, they were probably putting themselves in danger had RVD decided to lose to John Cena. And throughout the match, I'm not going to go through it, but it was boo, yay, boo, yay. Everything John Cena did was boo. They were in it from the beginning. And you really can't ask for anything more in a WWE or in a professional wrestling match. Doesn't matter the promotion. In a wrestling match, emotional investment. That was certainly emotional investment. Now, John Cena went on back to his comfy, cozy, mixed reactions on Raw, which were... Let's go, Cena. Cena sucks. I mean, which is what he was getting. And that's the one thing, too, about John Cena. We never got a true heel turn from him. He knows that. He brought it up in several promos that he knows people want to see a darker side of him. It's very transparent. I think it'd be fun as hell to watch. We haven't seen a heel Cena since he was a doctor of Thuganomics before he faced, what was it, Brock Lesnar at one point in early 2004. So it's been a long time. People forget, we actually have seen a heel John Cena. He was just the doctor of Thuganomics. So in the current iteration, we have not, which is disappointing. He was heel here because he was representing everything that ECW fans hated. And the fact that WWE, along with WCW, really put them out of business with their success, which is not really their fault, but... Hey, what are you going to do? It was just great. And if you want emotional investment, you want to feel like and remember why crowds matter in a pro wrestling environment, go watch ECW's One Night Stand 2006 main event or watch the whole damn show, both shows. You talk about passion. That is passion. That's emotional investment, guys. And that's what we've been missing with this whole pandemic. Now, every crowd's not going to be like that. This is a very, very rare exception where they're this invested in everything that goes on. It's also a very intimate environment. Only, 2,400 fans could attend. It wasn't very, very big, but it is just a great thing to watch. And it reminds you how important fans are to the product and how passionate they can be for certain situations and stars and promotions. So I really recommend you go watch both those moments. Now, again, I only focused on two moments here. I understand that. There are many other things that we could have talked about. The Sandman, Sabu, Balls Mahoney. I mean, we could have gone into all of their matches. But again, I wanted to touch on the two big ones that really hit me and are really the big two memories for me of those two events. Obviously, RVD winning the championship, but the reaction for John Cena and the shoot promo, real shoot promo from Paul Heyman. So, all right. Well, guys, thank you again for listening here on this February 24th, 2021, and the Wrestling Nostalgia portion of our show. I'll be doing the mailbag immediately following this, so it should be up as this one comes up shortly thereafter. And then I'll be back on Sunday night with Ashley Mann as we cover the weekend review. Until then, guys, I'll talk to you soon.